You're listening to The Big Show with Russick and Rose on the official home of your Calgary Flames, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
This one out to Zach in Winston Heights. Don't stop the party, Pitbull. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Coming up later, it's Name That Sound.
Really? We're playing that today?
No.
Oh. Live from Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio, it is The Big Show, Russick and Rose, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Can you intro the next Pitbull song coming up at 7:30?
I would love to.
And then, Patrick, can you do 8 o'clock?
Yeah.
And then we'll have intern Ben do 8:30. Sorry, Ben.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry. No worries.
You sound really enthused about that. Yeah, no problem. I'll do it with my deep intern voice.
He's got a big smile. He's looking forward to it.
Okay. Keep those Pitbull songs rolling in, 960-960, name and location. Not only do you get your song played, you get a shout-out on the air. Good shout-out. The head coach and general manager of the Calgary Stampeders, Dave Dickinson, at the bottom of the hour. The franchise, Eric Francis, 8 o'clock. Are we getting a coach soon? Because I thought maybe it would be this week. Guess not.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Friday? I don't know. Doesn't feel like anything's imminent, but we'll ask franchise about that. And the golf guys from Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee, are going to join us. Brent Gunning was such a staunch PGA Tour supporter and was trying to be the beacon of morality. And Sam's like, it's just all about money. I don't know why you're doing this. And now Sam gets to dance on the grave of Brent Gunning when it comes to this. And we'll do that live on our show at 8:30.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Because Rory McIlroy's, you know, what's good in the world, and now he has to play for this tour. Otherwise, like, what are you going to do? Going to quit golf now?
What are the options?
Yeah, and quit golf.
And, like, the thing, too, here, and we don't have to get into it too much, but there's a whole bunch of litigation that is going to be dropped as a result of this. And now you're like, well, what type of litigation is going to come from, like, federal government as far as monopolies and all that type of stuff that they were almost fighting, like, hey, you're running one, and now that's gone. I don't know.
There's so many layers to this story, which is
so many.
The biggest one in sports this year, that they essentially bought golf. Every tour, the LIV Tour, the PGA Tour, and the DP World Tour is all under one umbrella.
The Public Investment Fund.
Yep. The fifth richest entity on the planet.
Yep.
Is just spending the cheddar like nobody's business.
Commitment is believed to be about $3 billion.
Just to me, that seems like that's a little light. I thought it was going to be more than that, but then when you throw around these numbers, I don't know what three billion. What does that look like in a bank account?
It means
I don't
nothing
even know.
To me.
Yeah, exactly.
What
it's a lot of zeros.
$3 billion mean to me? Nothing. Yeah. That sounds fake. Like that's something I see in TV shows.
Like $3 billion, you can probably get Alex Brody killed, no problem.
What? Maybe.
Yeah, for sure.
You
cover it up.
Yeah.
You disappear for $3 billion.
Yeah, you live
yeah,
in a
you
different...
disappear.
It's different circumstances.
Yeah. So we saw a trade yesterday, which came out of like left field.
Yeah, all the insiders were on a plane.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all going to Florida, and like the Jackets, Flyers, and Kings decided to get together. Three-team deal. Columbus gets Ivan Provorov. The Flyers get Cal Peterson, Sean Walker, the Jackets 2023 first rounder, which isn't the third pick overall.
It is the 22nd overall.
Yeah, they got
previously. Previously belonged to the LA Kings.
Then it's the Jackets 2024 second round pick, conditional, and the Kings 2024 second round pick. And the Kings get Hayden Hodgson and Kevin Connaughton. So salary dump by the Kings, so they want to sign Gavrikov, which is great. He's been really good for them.
And replace their goalie.
Right. And who knows what this means for Carter Hart. But I wanted to ask you, looking at the Calgary Flames salary cap structure and their contracts on their team, who would be the best salary dump for the Calgary Flames for Craig Conroy to make? I'm not saying the most logical. What would be the best?
Is there ever a best salary dump?
Like which would help the team the most?
That implies that you've made a pretty critical error at this point and now you have to bite the bullet on it. Frankly, I don't know if there's much that you have to salary dump here for the Calgary Flames. Like, going into this season, it was obviously Milan Lucic. But for salary dump, I look at guys who are paid a lot of money and underperforming. And there's several guys who are going to be returning that I think fit that bill. Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri right at the top of the bill. right at the top of the list, but the cost that you would have to give up and the hoops you would have to jump through after giving both them no movement clauses would be so exponential that I don't think that even subtraction by or addition by subtraction helps his team if you kind of get yourself out from underneath those contracts.
Right, and I think that's the advantage Craig Conroy has. Outside of, again, the Huberto contract's not a good one right now.
It could be.
Yeah, but I don't know because he's
I don't know if 10 and a half.
And he's like, 30 years old now, and it goes all, he's a UFA at the end of 2030, 31.
Yeah, like.
It's from now to eternity at 10
and a half
million.
I think he's going to be much better this upcoming season.
I hope so.
Because this upcoming season, he's also not getting paid whatever he was last year, 5.9 or whatever it was.
Right. And I love that take that's floated around in this city. Like, everyone's 100% confident that's going to be the case. What if it isn't?
Well, what if it isn't? Well, then...
they're in trouble.
Yeah, then sell the farm. Move everything.
Right.
Bail out.
Like, because...
because then
is he the most...
my other reasoning here has been you've got too many good players that are signed long term to actually bottom out. But if he's actually not that good, then you bottom out. But I don't think that's the case.
Is he the most important player of the Calgary Flames this season? Because I think he is.
It's probably Jacob Markstrom, in my opinion.
But I think the depth you have in goal is a strength of the franchise.
But Dustin Wolf has played one game, and that depth is going to be gone by the time the draft is done. Because
you think
Vladar assume,
is no longer on the team?
I refuse to believe that this is a team that'll go with three goalies into camp. Like, three goalies that'll legit be on the NHL roster.
Because
what does Dustin Wolf have to do in the AHL anymore?
Right. He has nothing.
And what does Dan Vladar have to do in the AHL anymore? Nothing.
Right. Like, Dustin Wolf, literally the MVP of the league.
Yeah,
last season. Needs a shot in the NHL, even though he's super young.
Yeah, and we've heard them say they want to put more youth on this roster. So I would say the most important player is Jacob Markstrom. Because even his success, I think, bodes well for Dustin Wolf. Takes a little bit of pressure off the young man who, you know, as much as he's going to be coming up and he's got all this accolades before he got to the NHL, he's never played in the NHL for more than one game. And this is a team with real aspirations at this point.
To me, again, it's Jonathan Huberto is the most important player, and I don't disagree with Markstrom because even if Markstrom's average, this is a playoff team. But they've gave up so much to get him.
The financial compensation
and the financial just commitment you have to Jonathan Huberto is massive, and he needs to be that guy where he's racking up the apples and getting around. I think. 80-point season is a minimum, barring he has to stay healthy.
Yeah, I think a point per game season. That's easier to go than saying 80, right? Like,
yeah.
He gets hurt, he gets hurt. But I think point per game is kind of what you look for. Now, like, and because point per game isn't what it was 10 years ago. There's not three or four guys that do that every year. There's three or four guys that get to 100 points, and then there's like 25 guys that are point per game.
With the prices that got paid for Ivan Provorov yesterday.
Yeah.
It's steep.
It's very.
Right. So that makes me think, what is Noah Hanifin worth on the trade market? 26 years old, 1 year left at $4.95 million. Is Noah Hanifin a better defenseman than Ivan Provorov? Or here's the question.
He had a better year than Ivan Provorov.
I think Noah Hanifin's been a more consistent blue liner in his career than Ivan Provorov. Because before last season, Provorov was terrible the year before.
Yes. And this season...
He was a green jacket candidate, terrible
he
was.
This season he was okay. Last season he was terrible. You know, he was supposed to be paired with Ryan Ellis, and then that never worked out. He never played a game for them. I feel like there were maybe tough steps in the progression there for Ivan Provorov. I don't think that they're too far off. Mm-hmm. How about that? I don't know if one, you watch Noah Hanifin way more than Ivan Provorov because there was no way I was sitting down to watch a Philadelphia Flyers game unless the Flames were playing them or you clockwork oranged me. So sure. I'm going to lean Hanifin just because I know the player more.
Sure.
But I would effort a guess that they're not too far off.
Well, but that's why I'm asking now, what is Noah Hanifin now worth on the open market if Craig Conroy decides to trade him?
I'm just
based on what we just saw Ivan Provorov go for.
But what did they pay for Ivan Provorov? Like, most of the payment here is from the LA Kings, right? Like, when you look at this deal, the first round pick goes from Columbus, and if I'm not mistaken, it's a second round pick from Columbus. And apart from that,
yeah, but
and they got half the salary retained.
Yeah, right.
So they gave up a first and a second to get Ivan Provorov at half salary. And then there's a whole bunch of other, like, Philadelphia ended up getting some other stuff to take on the Cal Peterson contract and that type of thing. My point being that because this is a three-way trade, I don't know if there's any direct comparable that we can pull from this. But yeah, Noah Hanifin, like, he's for sure getting you a first-round pick into this draft.
Yeah.
I would say he's...
Well, that's what I was about to ask you. Like,
yeah.
How potentially high could you get Noah Hanifin for? If a team is desperate to get back into the playoff race...
Exactly, right? And that's when you start looking at teams in that 9, 10, 11 type of window. Those Predators, Blues, Red Wings,
Penguins?
Those type. Penguins are only at 14. And
need help on the blue line.
I could see it for sure. But also, do the Penguins even have their first round?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, they do. They have their first round pick.
Yeah. Remember the whole tree living thing, draft thing?
Yeah.
But...
You know, just quickly pulling up the draft list here. You've got Philly at 7. I don't know if that's a fit. You got Washington at 8, Detroit 9, St. Louis 10, Buffalo 13, and then you've got the Penguins and Predators.
I don't think Buffalo's making a deal. They want
14-15.
And they want Darlene and Power to play as much as possible on that team. So
true, but I also think that
you can also pair him with one of those guys. They need a goaltender in Buffalo first. But who knows if Pekka Luukkonen is the guy? It looks like he might be the guy. It
looks like he could be. And Devin Levi might be the guy more so than Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen.
Sure. I just wanted to say Pekka Luukkonen.
Yeah, they got that Samuelson kid there.
But again, that's the point here. I'm just saying, what I just saw Provorov go for, if I'm Craig Conroy in the Flames, like, you talk about a guy, sell high. Because is Noah Hanifin going to sign here long term? I don't know. But do you want to be paying Noah Hanifin north of $6, $7 million on the blue line when you already locked into Mackenzie Weegar at $6.25 million from now for a few seasons?
Yes, I do.
You want to keep Hanifin?
Yeah, because I'm a strong believer.
And you're trading Tanev, right?
Yeah. I'm a strong believer that you got to build your line, your team from the blue line out, because if you can't defend, you can't win games, because you can't outscore your problems unless you've got several of the best players in the world on your team. And Noah Hanifin helps move that bill along. Because the thing is, like, if you subtract Noah Hanifin from this roster, you have to find a replacement for him that's not within the organization. I don't think that Jeremy Poirier is ready to come in and step in and be a top six everyday defenseman. I don't know if Soloviov is ready for that yet, but I could see him getting a cup of coffee. And I don't know, it's definitely not Yan Kuznetsov. And those are kind of the three guys on the blue line that you look at as prospects that you're hoping to take a step. So now you have to look outside the organization. And we know that this free agency market is weak, to say the least. You typically overpay in free agency, and you have to get older guys in. I would much rather keep them around and sign them for, you know, you don't go max term. Maybe you go something 3-5 years, like you did with Andrew Mangiapane, and you kind of kick the can down the road for a few years and figure things out from there. I could see them doing that with Noah Hanifin as well. Like, the biggest thing here for me is, what is, and like we said with all of these UFAs, what is the appetite to re-sign? Is it a reasonable number? Is it an egregious? Like, if he's getting up over 8, 8.5, then there's just a hard pass, right? But if he's coming in at 6.5, like a Hampus Lindholm number type of thing.
Or like a Mackenzie Weegar
number. I would seriously consider it.
Well, then all of a sudden, the way you want to structure this team, because Ant Rasmus Anderson at $4.55 million is a great contract.
Incredible.
3 years left on that deal. All of a sudden, you have Hanifin at 26, Anderson at 26, and Weegar at 29. Like, the core of your blue line is right there if you keep Hanifin. So then what you're saying about Hanifin is you want to keep him. After Elias Lindholm, then he's the biggest priority on this team to sign a contract extension.
I would probably put Michael Backlund ahead of Noah Hanifin.
I wouldn't.
And it's...
But again, that's what Michael Backlund means, and he's the captain, but
the conversation to get him to sign a contract, or is it just to find out what his decision is? Because with all of these players, as we've come to find out, like, if they don't want to play here, then they don't want to play here. and they're going to throw a humongous number on the table that it gets to a point where you can't do it, and you got to move on from these guys, and you have to asset manage. So in the end, I think that Michael Backlund is a player that they would approach before going to Noah Hanifin, just because, like we've talked about, captaincy, more of a short-term deal, probably isn't going to get a huge raise compared to what he's at right now, so you get some certainty there, whereas Hanifin is going to need an upgrade. He's at 4.95. He's going to go up by, what, $2 million?
But we're running into that issue that we talked about, Lindholm, is you have to know what you're doing here before the start of the season.
No, 100%.
Because
I agree.
If the Flames are in a playoff spot, because you would get a ton for Noah Hanifin at the trade deadline,
mm-hmm.
but if they're firmly entrenched in a playoff spot, you're going to trade a top four blue liner off your
roster?
No,
I think that all of this has to happen in a very short order. Like I've said, you have to talk to these guys, and you got to find out, are you coming back? Are you staying? Is there any appetite for you to come and be with this group? And if the options are wishy-washy, if they come back and say, I'm not sold on it yet, and they don't have trade protection, I think you got to explore it. I think you have to explore every avenue. And for Craig Conroy right now, I think it's also important that, especially as a general manager who's taking over, not necessarily from outside the organization, you have to be able to put your own fingerprint on things, right? Yep. And one of those would be moving out several of these types of players.
But you and I were there, and he wants to win. Next season's about winning and being a competitive team to fight for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So if you're trading Lindholm and Hanifin this offseason, you're not really a Stanley Cup contender.
No, then you have to try and... No, and this is my point. Like, this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You have to make your decision, and you have to go to the direction that the players tell you. Like, this is the same thing that Brad Treliving has always said at the trade deadline for the last, 9 years he was here. Your players inform you what your options are. And not in the sense that they come up to your office and they knock on the door and they say, hey, go get me Austin Matthews. It'd be great if he was on the team. Sure. But in the sense that you watch them play, and based on what you see, you make a move. And based on your conversations with these players, you have to make a move. Frankly, I don't think any of these seven players should be off the trade board. I think you should be taking calls on all of them right now.
Right.
Because if you can, if there's an option and there's a request there that is that good, how are you going to say no to it? Because we saw this team last year, and as much as, yes, I believe they're going to be better and they're going to take a step forward after this season and going into the next year with a new head coach, I think that's going to make a world of difference for them. You can't get yourself in this situation where at the trade deadline you have to make these difficult decisions where you're like, okay, well, do I half tank my season or do I tank my future?
Yeah.
That can't be something that's on the table. So all of these decisions have to be made really soon. But I don't know if you can say, hey, this guy is better than this guy and better than this guy. Like, frankly, you just got to carpet wide net, ask everybody, and it's just got to be who's in and who's out. And you plan accordingly. Because the thing is, this isn't LA and this isn't New York and this isn't Toronto. People don't want to, this isn't like a high-profile destination where people are just itching to come here and play. And the other thing too is that via free agency, it's not what it used to be. Teams are locking up players for long term at younger age, more so than they ever have. As a result, free agents are older and they're not as impactful, and you still have to pay them like crazy.
I'm going to ask you one more question before we get to the break, and we'll talk to Dave Dickinson, general manager and head coach of your Calgary Stampeders, on the eve of the season opener. Who's more likely to be a Calgary Flame next season? Chris Tanev or Michael Backlund?
I would say... I'm going to say Michael Backlund.
Interesting.
More likely to be a Flame.
And this isn't a slight against Tanev in any way, shape, or form. You talk about...
I'm a humongous fan of the player.
Warrior.
Yes.
Heart and soul.
Exactly.
Gives his body for the team, literally.
And I hate having these conversations where I float the idea of trading him, because personally I think that it's probably going to blow up in their face, because every time they took him out of the lineup or
they
had to miss a game, they submarined for a game before they found themselves. But at the same time, that happened too often. And I don't blame the guy. Anybody who plays the way that he does and has for his whole career is going to run into... Like, what, you're going to blame him for taking a shot off the side of the face and then missing, 2 weeks of action? You can't blame the guy for doing that. But at the same time, this is a team that struggled when he wasn't there, and the value will probably never be higher. So I hate talking about it, but this is one of those, it's a business, hard decision conversations that you have to have when you're looking at the players that are available and that you have to make choices on. Like, do you believe that Nikita Zadorov can take another step forward and fill in more of that role that Chris Tanev held? He did a pretty good job on that first penalty kill unit. He can be a little bit wild to watch at times, but at the same time, this is a guy who is now 28 and maybe is starting to mature and kind of find that in his game, right? Defenseman, played in the league for a long time, but now you're relying on him a lot. And like we've talked about, I don't think they have a lot of off-roster help coming from the AHL. It's one of the, I think that if you make a trade, there's a couple things you need. You obviously need to have someone coming back that can help you on the blue line. Maybe you just sign Stetchdog, see what goes on there.
Mm-hmm.
But like they have a lot of options in front of them. That sure. is for sure.
A lot of tough decisions for Craig Conroy. It's like, okay, you're the GM. You've earned it. Now figure all this out with all our pending UFAs because there's a lot of them on this team.
Like, what would you rather have? Seven, like, everyday NHL players or two absolute megastars? Because that's essentially what they're going through right now. Last year, they dealt with two megastars leaving. This year, they have seven bona fide NHL roster players that they have to make decisions on.
Mm-hmm.
They're different. They're different problems to have. I don't know if any other GM is envious of either position.
Definitely going to ask the franchise that question. Who's more likely to be a Calgary Flame next season? Michael Backlund or Chris Tanev? Interested to see what the franchise has to say at the top of the hour. We'll also get his thoughts on, give us a feel. Because when we had him on, when he talked about the GM, he said within 2 weeks you'll hear about a GM, and boom, we Craig Conroy was hired. I want to get the timeline from Eric. Like, what's the timeline of head coach? Why don't you give us a little feel? Why don't you wet our whistle a little bit?
Yes, sir.
Why don't you tell us about that? He'll join us at 8 o'clock. The golf guys at 8:30. But straight ahead, on the eve of the Canadian Football League season.
Let's go.
The head coach of the Calgary and general manager of your Calgary Stampeders, Dave Dickinson, joins us next. And Maddie's going to introduce a Pitbull song when we're coming back from the break.
Whoop, whoop.
Keep your Pitbull songs rolling in. 960-960, name and location on the South Trail Hyundai text line. It's all straight ahead. It's the Big Show. Russick and Rose. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Hey, it's Haley Salvian from The Athletic. For a look at the latest on your Calgary Flames and NHL news, go click and subscribe to the Hockey Central 960 podcast. While you're there, please rate and review the show.
Welcome back to the show, The Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan, and you're listening to Timber with Pitbull, Mr. Worldwide, because it's going down at McMahon Stadium this week.
It's not bad. Thanks to Ethan and High River for the request. 960, 960 in the South Trail Hyundai text line. Pitbull songs all morning.
This brings me right back to high school.
Patrick's going to bring us from break at the top of the next hour with Eric Francis. And then intern Ben is going to introduce a Pitbull song at 8:30. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Like, I think I can do it better if it's at the end of the segment and I'm trying to hit a post. Like, that's when I'm in my prime.
Okay.
You know, I can draw on all my FM morning show experience, you know?
It's so vast.
Yeah, I was there for like 9 months. It was very vast.
The Calgary Stampeders kick off their season tomorrow night at home against the BC Lions. To talk about it, the head coach and general manager of the Calgary Stampeders on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, we say good morning to Dave Dickinson. Hey, Dave, how are you?
I'm good this morning. Thanks for having me on, guys.
What's your preseason routine? Is there any ritual you do? Is there a meal you specifically have? What do you do on the eve of the season? Sorry. Well. Again, the preseason's done. The season starts tomorrow. Do you have like a ritual you do right before the season, Dave?
No. Not going to say anything on that. We actually go over to Nick's, obviously a huge supporter of the Stampeders for so many years. Our deal is we go over there, have a great meal, the whole team, and the guys treat us well, and it's good to see the familiar faces as well.
Do you still get butterflies?
Not yet. I mean, right before the game, I definitely feel like the juices are flowing. I mean, the best thing is when the place is buzzing. Like, you know, I don't want to say that Labor Day is the only game that gets the place buzzing, but with those Jets and you feel it come over, that's when you really start to, in my opinion, feel what the football's all about and, what, and why you're doing it. And I think we're going to have great weather. It is a Thursday, so I know people sometimes get lose track of, is there a game or not a game? But it's supposed to have great weather, so I'm excited for this game.
Yeah, we're making sure people know about this one. Dave, this is your first kind of game practice week. What's your favorite part of getting ready, the practice week?
I like being on the field. Like, so we can be in the labs, if we want to call it, sitting here and trying to design plays and talking over schemes and, hey, let's try this on defense. Let's do this on special teams. But I really like to see how it's executed and if it looks good. And it's really honestly about teaching. So if you can teach your guys and why you're doing it. In today's generation, it's not like you just tell them what to do and they do it. They kind of need to know why. And that's good because you need to justify your thoughts. If you can't tell a player why you're doing it, then probably you don't have a good enough knowledge base of what you're putting in. So for me, I like being on the field. I really do.
Now, there's something that I've kind of noticed this year with some of the veterans. They're always kind of teaching new guys. In the CFL, there has to be a lot of that because there's a change in rules for a lot of players coming up from the U.S. What goes through your mind when you know you're kind of watching a drill, but off in the background you can see one of your vets kind of showing a rookie a move or something along those lines?
Well, I mean, we try to operate with the core four principles. One of them, the very first one, is play by the rules and know the rules. And you're right. Americans coming up sometimes, different rules, no yards. Kicking games is a lot different. You know, the yard off really does play into it as well. For me, the vet, if you have a good group, they're secure with their jobs. And not that you're saying that this job is yours to the vet because you aren't competition, but a vet knows if he can play or not, and he's not going to necessarily hold back information to try to keep the guy behind him even that much farther behind him. And if you have a good group and you're all in it, you're all rowing in the same direction, the vets are the ones that are going to kind of take this as far as we go.
Dave, you've opened this can of worms for me now. I have to ask you, what is your favorite CFL rule and your least favorite CFL rule and maybe the one you change?
Well, I am on the rules committee, so unfortunately I have trouble listening. I do. I think I need to be better at that. I have been married for, I don't know, 24 years, so I'm learning. Yeah. But, you know, I do. I do have trouble listening. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the single, the rouge. You know, sometimes I know it's part of the rules and rugby and field position. But I also understand, for me, here's the thing about rules: be consistent. Just so people don't get confused. And for me, it's, you know, as many rules that are the same in football. I'm not talking, you know, college, pro, anything is better. Like, why is it 2 feet in one leg and 1 foot in another? And you know, I just, in my opinion, just be consistent because football is football, and fans, it's like, oh, that's a college rule. I forgot about that. You know, there's a university rule here where if you just run it out to the 1 yard line on a kick, then they move it up to the 25. I'd watch college guys, what's just happened, you know, after a minute. And so same thing with fans, be consistent so that everybody knows kind of what's going on. And that way you're watching actually the action in the game, not the officiating.
Wanted to ask you about your quarterback coach as we're getting set for the first game against the BC Lions. It's Jake Mayer's first training camp, first kind of week one as your starter. What have you made of Jake's kind of last month that he's put together?
I just want him to realize he's one of the guys. He's got to be a leader, and he has been. He's gonna grow as the season goes on. He's going to get better and better. Don't put too much pressure on yourself for week one. Go play well. Be yourself, but you're just one of the pieces of the puzzle, and ultimately the guy needs to play well for us to win. But I do think he's still young. He's in the early stages of his development, and we have to realize that. But also, we're in the winning business. We're here to win, so we're certainly there. We got to get some wins.
Your two starting quarterbacks have had different personalities. Bo Levi Mitchell, maybe a little bit more of that kind of rock star, whereas Jake Mayer, I was chatting with him after practice on Monday, and he was just a, you know what, I'm just happy to be here, happy to go about and do my business type of guy. What's the difference between those two kind of personalities being your starter? I know you dealt with it last season, but it's a little bit different going through camp and the whole offseason like that.
Yeah, but I've went through lots of personalities. I mean, my first coaching was with Henry Burris, and a big personality as well. And we cycled through, you know, Drew Tate, Kevin Glenn, and then into Bo. And we've worked with a lot of quarterbacks. You let them be themselves is what you do, but you make sure that whatever they're trying to provide to the team as they live it, you know, just it can never be hollow words. You can't just talk and not follow through. And you know, that's the truth is the quarterback runs this league. It really does. If you're doing well, it's because your quarterback's playing well. And it's our job though to make sure we're putting the quarterback calling plays and running schemes that fit their skill set. So yes, it's not all on them. The coaches have to find things that fit what they do well. But this league is driven by quarterback play. I think we all know that.
Dave, talk about your offensive lines, some injuries, some new names. What are you liking for this group heading into tomorrow night?
Well, we have had a little bit of injuries, but we also did some change. A couple new tackles. I mean, he's been here, but I do feel like he hasn't played a lot. I really liked his camp. He kind of came in and just took the job. And ultimately, with the O-line, they decide how well the quarterback plays. You know, if we keep them upright, if we can run the ball, job of a quarterback is a lot easier. So let's gel. Let's come together. Maybe missing a couple pieces still as we go forward here. But I think I've got enough horses there to get the job done, and I believe in these guys.
Dave Dickinson, the general manager and head coach of your Calgary Stampeders, joining us here on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Big Show, Russick and Rose, Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Dave, what did you learn from that preseason finale against BC that you probably will take into tomorrow night's game?
Just that our team fights. I mean, we were down big early and it didn't look good. And they could have, I think it was 22-3 at half. They could have shut it down and just said, oh, we'll get them next week. But, everyone just kept playing, kept fighting. That's a good sign. We do have to play better, though. We're not. We really haven't in the two preseason games. I don't think we come close to putting together good football yet. So, long way for our team to go, but we still have the fight. We you know, a good group of guys. Now we got to be better. We got to be skilled, and we got to have more playmakers.
We got a couple interviews coming up later on in the show with Juwan Simpson, your defensive line coach, and James Vaughters, one of your new defensive ends. Can you just tell us a little bit about that group as well? Because you've added a couple of new players on the ends, Vaughters, who I mentioned, and then Julian Hauser coming over from Hamilton after a pretty strong CFL career.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't play a ton together. I think it could be our strength of our team. It's to be determined, though. They got to get the job done. I mean, you can look at people on paper and how they look in practice, but you got to go to the games. You got to put pressure on the quarterback. You got to hit quarterbacks, and you got to disrupt timing. You got to be the physical hammer. You know, we can talk all we want. Let's see if we can get it done. But if our D line is playing like I think they can, I think we can cause people some issues. And we have to get after quarterbacks. We got to get after quarterbacks, no doubt.
I wanted to ask you about Juwan Simpson, and I think Patrick's asked you about this throughout training camp as well, but you've had plenty of former players come through as coaches. I think about Josh Bell and Marquay McDaniel, and now we've got Nick Lewis and Juwan Simpson just joining the group here now. Do you see this in your players as they're playing, that there might be coaching down the road, and kind of keep that in the back of your mind for if they ever reach that point like Juwan or Nick did?
Yeah, the best example is Corey Mace. Corey Mace was hurt, and as a veteran, he gets paid. So I just remember going up to him probably around September and saying, hey, tough break. He had a back injury. It's a serious injury. And, hey, think about coaching next year because I think you'd do great. At that point, he probably shoved me down because he's like, hey, I want to keep playing. But next year he came on board, and, you know, to me, as you saw the progression, you can see it, certain guys, you can. Now, not all of them are going to necessarily take the next step like Corey has, but you hire people because you see something in them different. And the street cred you get from a player it's real. You know, the guys, they don't necessarily know when you played, but they know you put the time and effort into it. And as a player, it's not necessarily – as a coach, excuse me, that you're looking for the guy that's the best player that'll be ultimately the best coach. You're looking for certain intangibles, some things that you think help them succeed. If I hired J.C. Sherritt off Edmonton because I looked at him and I knew he would be a good coach. And those are the things as hard for me to find guys on other teams because I don't know them, but it's easier to look at your own team and say, that guy, I know if he wants it, he could coach. So we brought a bunch of guys back on guest coaches, and those guys, I believe, could all be good coaches too. It's just a matter if they want to put the time and effort in and go down that path.
Has there ever been a player that's maybe turned into a strong coach that you watched them play and said, I think that after he's done playing, he's going to go and do something completely different, and he surprised you?
I don't really know on that one. Yeah. That's certainly the coaching business can chew you up. I mean, the other thing about coaching so hard, a lot of times you're in and out, but your lifestyle changes. We've been super lucky here, and we don't take it for granted, but we understand that most of the time you're hired to be fired. So we're on edge. We know we got to do the job as well, and we got to win.
Dave, wanted to ask you, how are you going to be looking at your opponents differently now that you're also the GM? And you're the head coach, and now you're like, oh, I like what that guy did there. Maybe I should make a phone call after the game. Are you going to be looking at the game maybe just a little bit differently with your added title as general manager?
I can't tell you. I'm 100% positive what it's going to look like, but I realize the first thing is that important is taking care of your guys and making your guys better. And you brought them here for a reason. Now, in the off season, you definitely are looking around, but there's not a lot of trades in the CFL. There are some. But if you're doing a good job and you're scouting and you're bringing in the right people, you should have people in place on your team to fill in and you give them opportunities first. We've always operated that way. We should again. It kind of builds trust in the locker room. It builds trust that we have a plan for you. We're not always looking for the new flashy toy. It's not to say that you can't make a splash, though, and a lot of teams towards the end of the year find a piece here or there that kind of puts them over the top, and we'll certainly be looking to do that.
Your most veteran player in your locker room, Rene Paradis, is looking at a career after football. He's becoming a firefighter now, and he works two 24-hour firefighting shifts a week. How have you made balancing Rene's time as obviously being your number one place kicker and one of the best all-time kickers in the league and his career after football becoming a firefighter?
He hasn't really changed at all. I mean, he's missed the odd thing, but very, very little. And he's not planning on missing much at all in the season.
Yeah.
You know, if there's something crazy and weird, like sometimes it's harder. Let's say we have a five-day week, so he can't mix and match his schedule. But he's been able to talk with his crew. I don't know exactly which house he's part of, but we've got it worked out. I thought he's kicked excellent. He looks like he's in great shape. He's happy. It works for a kicker. It really does. If you told me I needed an offensive lineman to do this, and I don't know, that might be a little tougher, but the guy is still here basically every day, and he's a big part of our team. He's a captain. The guys voted him a captain, so the guys are bought into what he stands for and how he plays.
I'd heard Reggie Bagleton when we were chatting, have a little interview earlier this week, and he was mentioning that sometimes he felt like last year he was putting a little bit too much pressure on himself, and this year it's going to be important to remember that, you know, at the end of the day, you are playing a game here, and fun has to be a part of it too. And that was something you kind of just mentioned with Renee. Like, I know that you put a lot of emphasis on family, but how much emphasis is there on making sure that this is just a conducive work environment that guys like to come to and be a part of, and that breeds success?
You work on it, but it's kind of in their court. You give them opportunities, but you try to facilitate it. You try to go do things outside of here. You'll play a little harder for someone, I guess, that maybe you consider like extended family. It's not easy. I mean, everyone talks about it, culture and Miami Heat and great culture and this and that, but it's nothing that you necessarily can force feed. It's about the players. You hold each other to a standard. There's accountability. The main thing I would say is trust. If you trust the guy next to you that he's going to be there for you, he's not out partying, he's all in, those are the relationships that will last as well for a lifetime. So that's what we're trying to develop. And, yeah, I think we're doing a good job, but that's just a credit to the players.
Coach, you've been the head coach for a long time. You've now got the general manager title. Who does Dave Dickinson still learn from these days?
Oh, I better be learning the whole thing. I mean, I listen to my coaches, Huff and all that, and Brendan Mahoney and Cole Huffnagel. I talk to other people in the league. Bob Sloak's a great resource. He's got younger sons that are in the NFL, and he's been coaching for 40 years. Probably aged him there. I don't think it's 40, but it's up there. I don't claim to have all the answers at all. In fact, I think even myself is look in the mirror, man, and try to be better.
Dave, I wanted to ask you, who's the one player maybe flying under the radar that fans are going to be really surprised with this season?
I don't know on that. I mean, I don't want to put any pressure on a certain guy. I mean, somebody's gonna come out of our receiving corps and break out. We're going to have that third or fourth guy that's going to at least have some big games. So who it's going to be, though, could change on a weekly basis. Defensively, you know, I do think one of our defensive ends, I think, is finally going to have that opportunity to take it over the top. You know, double-digit sacks make big impact on the game.
Dave Dickinson is the general manager and head coach of your Calgary Stampeders. They kick off their season tomorrow night at home against the BC Lions. Dave, all the best this season, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for this.
Okay, look forward to it, and we'll see you guys at the McMahon tomorrow night.
Sounds good. There he is. Dave Dickinson, head coach GM, your Stamps on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Brought to you by Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, using the same secret recipe since 1975. Down in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, takeout or delivery at 403-248-3344. Who's the breakout player I need to look for this season on the Stamps?
Defense or offense?
Offense, because it's way more fun.
I'm going to say Trey Odom's Dukes or Clark Barnes.
Well, Luther.
Luther's a good choice, but he plays the outside, which you don't get a lot of love as the outside Canadian receiver. If you're the inside Canadian receiver,
Trey would make
some money.
Trey would be there. That slot spot.
He's kind of filling in his Kamar Jordan's old role. And Clark Barnes is a Canadian who they drafted third round, I believe. And he had a really good camp. But there's, like Dave said, they've got him and they've got Rice and John and they've got Cole Tucker, who are all really impressive so far. They got Middlemost, and they've got Hakuna Vanu, and they've got Hunchak, and then Jalen Philpott's going to join the team like maybe halfway through the season-ish, sometime in the back half probably. So they've got a lot of depth at Canadian. On the defense, I would say my number one guy to keep an eye on is Titus Wall, number 32, Sam linebacker.
Looking up the odds right now for the Grey Cup.
Sure.
Stamps boat plus 600 to win the Grey Cup. Do you like that?
I do. Where does that kind of rank as far as the odds go?
Probably like
third or fourth.
Yeah.
Yes.
Behind what? Toronto?
Hamilton, Winnipeg?
Yeah. That would be my guesses.
Yes.
Yeah, 600. I don't hate it. Like, the CFL is, like, you know, Zach Caleros could go down in week one and all of a sudden the league is totally open to be grabbed, right?
Yeah.
I wanted
to. Does it say what their win total is?
Well, that's put at? I'm looking at the division. The Stamps to win the West Division plus 360 to win the division.
I would take that.
Really?
That's you don't think third?
Isn't there value on Winnipeg a plus 105?
Yeah,
like plus 100%. Money for the Bombers to win the West Division.
I think that the Bombers offensive
listen
line
to me
aging.
Talking CFL odds like that. Like
the
I
Bombers
sure.
have about one more year really with this crew, with this aging crew. I don't even know if they can hold up this year. That's an old group on that offensive line. Obviously Stanley Bryant coming back again. It's an old group. It's an experienced group. It's probably the most experiencedly talented receiving offense they have in the league, I would say.
I don't know. Edmonton's got a good group of receivers, too. Like
I'm just saying who's pulling the trigger there in Winnipeg.
Yeah, Zach Caleros moves the needle a lot.
Yeah.
But the other thing, too, is if they don't have protection, it's the same thing with the Stamps. Like, the biggest question with this team here in town is, are they going to be able to protect Jake Mayer?
Mm-hmm.
I think on the interior, go toe-to-toe with anybody in the league.
Oh, the interior on the Stamps.
When you go Williams, Sevier, and then Sean McEwen in the middle, that's you're not going to find a better trio, especially because they're all Canadian.
Yeah.
But on the outsides, there's a lot of questions in the tackle position.
I'm looking at the win total for the Calgary Stampeders right now.
Uh-huh.
Before I tell you what it is, what would you set it at?
I would set it at 9.5.
Patrick?
10.5.
The number's 9.5.
Okay.
-120 for the over, -105 for the under. So the under's the favorite. Oh, sorry, the over's the favorite.
I would hit the over myself. I think the Stampeders defense is going to be real airtight this year. And if the offense can just put up enough points, I think they're going to be in pretty good shape.
Patrick, over or under win total?
Over.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys are optimistic. And that's good. It's good to cover a winning team.
Hey,
and both of you are doing a great job of doing that.
Most consistently winning team the city's had.
I think true. I've never covered a losing season.
Yep.
I think I'm in there five
they
or 6 years.
They haven't missed the playoffs since 2004.
Really?
Yeah. I think.
It's been that long?
Yep.
Wow. All right.
Essentially, since Dave Dickinson has gotten here, they haven't missed the playoffs.
Well, that's positive.
Weird. The Huff era started in 08 when they won a Grey Cup.
Yep.
Okay.
Good stuff.
Hot Stampeders talk every Wednesday with the head coach and general manager, Dave Dickinson.
And we'll give our fantasy updates next as we go on.
Oh,
moving
yeah.
forward.
I'm even going to watch the game tomorrow.
Good.
I'm going to be there.
And I'm going to learn about...
Pick me up?
Well, I got a ball hockey game. I was going to listen to some of these names you guys keep talking about.
Yeah.
See where they play.
Yeah. Depth chart should be out in like an hour or something like that.
Cool.
I'll tweet that out.
Lots of like questions surrounding the Calgary Flames right now. Are we close to having a head coach named?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the latest is on Elias Lindholm? And who's more likely to be a Calgary Flame game one of the season next year? Michael Backlund or Chris Tanev? These are all the questions I want to ask the franchise straight ahead. Eric Francis covers the Flames for Sportsnet will join us. And at 8:30, one of the golf guys from Sportsnet 590, the Fan in Toronto, Brent Gunning, he's at the Rory McIlroy news conference. So he's going to join us at 8:30. He'll give us the deets on what he heard from Rory McIlroy. Sam McKee will join us as well after the biggest story in sports that the PIF has bought in essentially golf. Everything golf-related is purchased. PIF owns it. We'll talk about that in the 8 o'clock hour. And we're also still taking your Pitbull requests. A song for Pitbull. I'm going to be at Stampede for the first time. Pitbull's one of the acts. Give us your Pitbull song. Patrick's going to bring us back from break with a Pitbull song, DJ Styles on FM radio. And then intern Ben is going to do it at 8:30. No pressure, Ben. Keep your Pitbull song request 960-960. On the South Trail Hyundai text line rolling in. It's all straight ahead. It's The Big Show, Russick and Rose, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.